I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by One United Bank, America's largest Black-owned bank and first Black internet bank.
One United Bank is leading an exciting new charge and encouraging us all to think about ways to make Black history now.
Through our spending, our impact, our activism, and our legacy.
This is more than a moment. It's a movement. With the right mindset and actions, we can be financially woke. When we unite the power of our dollars, there's no limit to what we can do.
One United believes that money is power, and we can use it to build wealth in the Black community, not only for today, but for the future as well.
Move your money and bank Black with One United Bank today. Visit oneunited.com to learn more.
Sweetest, let us know when you open up an account so we could celebrate with you.
Hey, 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 it's Courtney.
Joy Marie here, and we are back.
Yes, new episodes of Job Logs on the 1st and the 15th of every month.
If you love the show, share it with a friend or a coworker. Spread the love.
Complete our audience survey by April 30th for a chance to win a $100 gift card. Visit joblogs.com/survey today.
Coming up, is it just us or does it seem like these days day jobs are getting a bad rap? This week, we're catching up with one of our group chat girlfriends and entertainment marketer, Brooke Devard Ozai-Dimley, to discuss ways to work your 9-to-5 and take advantage of the resources, access, and network your job can afford.
Yes, but first, we're clocking in. Joy, what's a good word?
I'm doing well. I'm staying busy. I'm staying fit. I'm going to the gym. Yes. I have a trainer. I'm staying hydrated. So I really can't complain. I do feel like 30 has continued to be like such an introspective and transformative year of growth. Like, yes. It's funny. All the rumors are true. Like, 30 is amazing. So I'm blessed. What about you? How are you?
I'm good. I have come back with extra jewelry.
You're blinding me, honey. You're blinding me. Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, I got engaged in Mexico. Yes. I'm very excited. Aww. But it's interesting because it's like it's a mix of like this very joyful, light. But it's also like it's,
lightness, yes. It's, lightness is the word to use, honey. Like, I can't see.
But it's just like it's heavy at the same time. It's like it's like an adult. My love life is adulting. Like there's this. I'm engaged.
Yeah.
I was saying like I almost feel like a mob wife in training because it's just like it's for the family. Like this is serious.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like it feels very serious.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Just off of that shift.
Like we've talked about it like we've been together a very long time, but it just feels like it's like something.
Is it, you know, is it the, it's a statement to the world about you.
It like, was even crazy like going from just telling like you and friends and family to like put it on social media. It's like this is like a press release
and you're
moment.
I feel like you're pretty private too
I am.
About certain things so it's like this is a declaration.
He is tagged, handles included. Like it's
I love
thing.
It though. Congratulations.
Yes, new chapters on the horizon.
I love it. So while you were busy floating away in bliss world in paradise, the world was scamming and girl, that's a lot. I feel like, so every week I feel like when I chat with you, I'm just like Facebook because you called it before it was even on my radar. So I think Zuckerberg at the time of this recording is like testifying.
Yeah.
And that, I caught like a snippet of it.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten into that.
Wasn't doing too well for the clip I saw, but I saw, I'm not even going to talk about the data privacy stuff, but I saw a different data privacy issue where it came out that one of the Black Lives Matter pages, the one with the most followers on Facebook period, over 700,000 followers, was actually fake. It's a fake. It's run by Australian scammers What are they scamming? Girl. So they fundraised. They collected money, over $100,000, and purported that it would be donated to the Black Lives Matter movement.
That is horrible.
And what's funny about the situation is that the real Black Lives Matter movement, I think some folks from there had actually suspected that it was a fake. CNN reported this, that it was a fake page and reported it to Facebook, but nothing was done. And that seems to be, like, the recurring theme of Facebook's woes these days. So it just makes me think about, like, who the onus lies on to vet.
This is so interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think this is a quote, one that I saw on Twitter during his hearing this happening. Now Zuckerberg says, "We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was our mistake. That was my mistake. I'm sorry." But that's, like, the thing. It's like responsibility. Like, no one, people are just rolling these apps and technologies out, and no one's just thinking about who is responsible for that.
Yeah, and on the same page, like, we've talked a lot recently with the fake news trend about the onus on us as, like, consumers to make sure.
Part of it, you know, when I was posting about my engagement, I was really thinking about whether I should do it on Facebook. Like, I was
really
questioning whether I should.
Why?
Because it was just, like, with everything happening, do I want to contribute to this platform? And I rationalized it with, like, I don't really use Facebook.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I'm just putting this on there. But in a way, like, I'm putting it on there so people will engage with it. So, like, I am adding to their community, quote unquote. So,
Apple execs are boycotting Facebook, but I have a feeling that's slightly rooted in self reasons. But in
they don't want us digging in their garden, girl. Apple.
In other scam news, this I didn't know if you wanted to touch on this. We haven't really gotten into it on the group chat.
Okay.
Can we discuss your alma mater?
As long as you don't drag my institution.
I will absolutely not. Howard University, a fine institution, historically Black college and university. But lately, recently, kind of got in the middle of an internet firestorm about some misappropriation of financial aid funds. Google it, read up on it. I don't really want to focus on that. I want to talk a little bit about a gentleman that found himself in the center of the drama. A young Tyrone Hankerson Jr., law student at Howard University.
And SoundCloud rapper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you didn't get the... No! Oh, my God. Our group chats have been lit. They have been hilarious.
I bet.
I have been cracking
up. I want to be a fly on the wall. But, yeah, so this gentleman, as I understand it, you know, he's a graduate-level law student, but worked in the financial aid office, so kind of got mixed up in whatever this scam was, this misappropriation of funds. He was accused of spending over $400K in financial aid. And social media, as they want to do, dragged this man, like, went back and found pictures of him with furs and Gucci bags and said, oh, no, Tyrone, not today. But I wanted to talk about it because he then, I read recently, is suing Howard for $10 million. And it made me think about, like, the court of public opinion and when, like, is too far. And, like, you know, you went to Howard. I've had different groups I've been affiliated with that have been dragged into scandals. And it's always a sensitive thing. It's like, when do you kind of jump on somebody if they haven't for a fact been tried as guilty?
Like, that is true. And, you know, this might be unchristian of me, but I don't feel bad about his drag. Something in the milk is not clean. I don't know how involved you were. I don't know. Something is not right. So, I mean, I do not feel bad about
that.
These jokes got off.
Did you contribute to it?
No, like, not online, in my personal life.
But why didn't you? Online.
I'm not very, like, I'm not, like, a dragger.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not something I enjoy doing on social at all. So, yeah, I didn't participate, but I don't know. I just feel like it's a symptom of a larger issue. So it's like, I don't even care about him. Like, the jokes were funny.
Yeah.
But, like, really, my only concern is, like, why can't this prestigious institution, like, get it together?
Yeah.
Why is this president dealing with these issues in secret? Like, why does it take a Medium post for, or wherever they posted it, for it to come out? So, like, my issue is always going to be with, like, let's serve these students that are
I like when dragging is used for good in that type of capacity, like to incite social change. We talked about it on the show. But I think I was just thinking twice about on the personal level, you know, when you draw the line and maybe when you choose to or not to opine on something.
Yeah,
publicly.
I am very just the point that the culture has gotten with that, it's a little disturbing to me.
Yeah, for sure.
And just like on so many levels. And I think people are starting to talk about this more, just about like how beneficial is that? Or like even someone like a Cardi B.
Yeah.
And like, Cardi B is problematic and da-da-da, and we're going to drag her for this. But like, why wouldn't she be problematic? She's like 25 years old.
Right.
A stripper from the Bronx. Like, she's going to have to learn things, and people aren't going to learn at all if our instinct is to just drag them through the mud.
Yeah. Well, you know, just I just want to encourage us all to exert a little bit of caution in choosing to or not to engage in that kind of behavior.
But yeah, and I think people are so quick to want to jump on the bandwagon and show that they're
it's
woke.
It's groupthink,
That I think, like, we also need to remember, like, you could be looking like crazy out here. So I mean, maybe Tyrone, if we owe you an apology, you know, prove it in a court of law and we will give you your apology. So next up is rants, raves, and reviews, and this is the part of the show where we share things that are helping or hindering us in the world of work. So Joy, you are up.
Yeah, I have a bit of a rave slash maybe recommendation.
Okay.
So, you know, I got tired of you and our other girlfriend in the group chat who are clearly very politically woke and just up on everything,
sharing
stories that I had no context about. And so I've started incorporating into my morning routine reading my trades and my newsletters
Look
and
at
my
you.
Publications.
Wrong.
Yeah. I like It's important because I feel like to just have the context of what's going on in the world to be able to contribute meaningfully to conversations. And also just like in work, just to kind of understand how what's happening on a macro level is affecting what you're doing. So I think we've done this before a few times in past episodes, but I think a refresher is always good. So I just kind of wanted to go through the ways that I keep up on the news and trends and also hear from you like what your favorite methods are.
Sure.
It's always changing, so I'm always fascinated. So, for me right now, Twitter remains up there. I mean, it's real time, and I feel like the trending topics tell you what you need to care about.
Precisely.
Obviously, fact check. For me, industry specific, for the space I'm in, I love Ad Age, DigiDay, which is for marketing and advertising. Insights and their podcasts as well. So I like their newsletters. I like their podcasts. I do CNN breaking news alerts to my email, my work email though. So I also split it between my personal and my work email.
Okay. Do you do like the push notifications on your phone?
I do the New York Times push notifications. So I can only do one app for push.
Okay.
I'm thinking about stopping that because lately both those and the CNN email ones are dominated with this fool of a president. And that's just like, this is just not, this can't all be news.
Yeah.
Like, what else is happening? So, but I like the mix of getting real-time updates just to be, even if I like swipe it off my screen, just to be aware of what happened that day.
Yeah.
And then with the emails, it's like, I choose to dive deep if
I like
want.
That.
So I love Fast Company for innovation in different spaces because I think that's like what helps me feel like I'm plugged into the future. And actually LinkedIn, too.
Really? I am never on LinkedIn.
I love LinkedIn.
Never there.
I feel like folks only use LinkedIn twice a year.
So,
I'm on LinkedIn.
Nice.
And, yeah, I like LinkedIn. It gives you it's from your feed. So there's the content that your feed is sharing, articles they think are relevant. So I like that aspect, like seeing what my timeline is curating. And then, of course, the occasional op-ed or deep, you know, long-form article to dive into. But, yeah, what are your sources?
Well, you know, I don't know when it happened, but Twitter is now my only source of news, really.
That's amazing.
I know. But, I mean, my feed is immaculate. And it's because what I do, the key to a great Twitter feed is I follow writers or just people who are researchers, anyone who's like paid to be curious. So if I read an article and I really just like how they write, their perspective, then I'll add them on Twitter.
Got it.
Only problem with that, and I'm kind of thinking about maybe divesting from Twitter, is because I just think I'm concerned about not having original perspective or giving myself space to, like, think of how I feel about something before. Because, right. Like, the thing about getting your news from Twitter or social media is that it comes framed already. Right. It comes with an opinion.
Right.
And I'm just concerned that, like, and I mean, I just catch up by, like, when I'm on a train, I'll just be like, okay, what's happening on Twitter?
Blah, yeah. Blah. Like, okay. Are we just regurgitating other right. people's perspectives?
And it goes back to kind of that group think mm-hmm. we were talking about with dragging people. It's like, am I really mad about this?
Right.
Or am I just mad because everybody right. else is mad?
Ooh, okay. All
so right. I'm thinking, my friend referred me to Feedly, which I might try. It's kind of like a throwback to Google Reader, where you can, like, add sites and they would pull in.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe I need something to, like that. Take that approach of, like, maybe adding some outlets that I like and just kind of going back to more long form. Because I'm... Listen, TV. These technologies, child, y'all not going to get me caught up out here, so...
So we are pretty excited to have Brooke in the studio with us today. Welcome, Brooke.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm a longtime Joblogs listener.
Yes.
So it's kind of surreal to be on the show.
Yeah. We actually met at a networking event.
Yes.
Like, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah, I think just about 2 years ago. And you were so kind to me. I was just like a little baby podcaster. Like, I literally had put up 3 episodes and... You know, I knew Joblogs, it was this big show, and I came up to you, Joy Marie, and you were just so kind. You allowed me to take you out to dinner.
Yeah,
and
of course.
You've just been so helpful to me. So yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So Brooke DeVard O'Zeidenlee is a senior marketing manager at Viacom in New York City, where she oversees content strategy and digital marketing, helping to develop some of Viacom's first original content series, like Hype and Influence and the Fan Club podcast. Really fun. Prior to Viacom, Brooke also worked at Ralph Lauren as a social media manager, overseeing the social strategy for their luxury brands. And she started her career in London as a product marketing manager for Nokia's entertainment team. So definitely very well suited for this conversation. You've had a number of roles mm-hmm. in corporate and kind of navigated that and used that to build up your own personal endeavors. So in your spare time, you also host the Naked Beauty podcast, discussing beauty trends, tips. I've been a guest on the show. Yes. It's amazing. So just really excited to dive in today.
For sure. So let's get right into the meat of it.
Let's.
We know that many of us are kind of conditioned to, like, despise the day job. Mm-hmm. Like, it has a really bad reputation problem. But you say that we need to kind of reframe how we look at that.
Yes, absolutely. I think for me, working at a company is getting paid to learn. And I think that there's this really dangerous mentality of working in a big corporation being this, like, soul-sucking waste of your time when you could be pursuing things that you're actually passionate about. And I think the key is to figure out how to bring your passions into the workplace and, like, these are, like, multi-billion dollar, even if you're at a startup, there's so much you can learn at a startup in terms of process and how they organize the teams and how they do budget. So I think working at a company is one of the best ways to learn and get paid.
Yeah. Where does that mentality come from? Like, how did we get to that place?
How do I think people think
about, like, the example of, like, the Monday blues, which we talk about. Yes. We've talked about in past episodes, like, getting away from that dread about mm-hmm. Mondays. Where did we get to a place where it was just sort of commonly acceptable to view your day job as just drudgery?
Yeah, I think that it's just kind of very pervasive throughout culture. It's this whole idea about living for the weekend, right? Everyone's just kind of counting down the days until Friday. But I think that's a sign that you're not at the place that you need to be, or you're not really maximizing the opportunities you have in the role you're in.
And I think we talked about this on a previous episode. You kind of almost use it as a bonding tool, which is kind of sick.
That's interesting.
With your other coworkers, because I know when we come back from holidays, everyone's in the elevator just, like, so bummed to be back. Right. Even when you have, like, a great institution that you work for. It's like small talk almost.
I also think just generally the nature of work has evolved, where now, you know, it's less about manufacturing and goods and all of that, and more, they're more service-based roles. There's marketing and design and just things that are more creatively inspiring too. So maybe our mentality needs to shift with that as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think another big thing that I've seen on my timeline, I don't know if you've encountered this, is just, like, the idea that working for yourself or entrepreneurship can somehow equate to freedom, whereas like a day job is limiting you from reaching your full potential.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's a really dangerous mentality because entrepreneurs have a lot of challenges. My husband has his own agency. Mm. And if you don't have a boss, guess what? You have a client or a vendor that you're dealing with. They're still...
Oh, my God. Say that again. I feel like so many people overlook that. Right. You're still working for somebody.
You're still working for someone. You still have to figure out a way to pay the bills. And it can actually be more stressful than having that security of a paycheck. And then you think about what that security allows you in terms of just spiritually knowing that that check is coming kind of gives you a limit, sorry, an ability to be more comfortable in a way that I don't think you can be when it's all on you to bring in the money. And I think it's something that I learned very early on, actually my first job when I was in London. So I, you know, graduated from college. I was the most junior person on the team. Like I was, you know, very entry-level coordinator, and I was in their London office. Everyone was international. Nokia is a Finnish company. They were not a market leader at the time that I joined, but it wasn't about the company that I worked for or the position that Nokia was in. I had the most amazing boss, and it's been 5 years, so I now can recognize that he was incredible, Andy Gateskill-Kendrick. Incredible. He trusted me because we were launching a music product in the US. It was a streaming music service, Nokia Music. And I pitched this idea where we would do a series of short documentary films across the country. So I was like, we'll do one in New Orleans. We'll do one in New York. We'll do one in LA. All short micro docs. The films were really incredible. He let me basically go on the road, make all this content. We premiered it at Sundance. It was aired on television. Then I was sort of like, oh, work is really just what you make it.
Yeah.
You have to bring ideas to the table. No one asked me to go and do a documentary film series. It was kind of, and some of it's also the naivete. Like when you're very junior, you kind of just think you can. So I didn't even think anything twice about proposing it.
Right.
And it was approved, and Beyonce even used one of some of our B-roll from the New Orleans shoot in Lemonade.
Yeah. Oh, did she?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that, I mean, that was like 3 years after we even made it, but...
Beyonce owes you a thank you now.
I know. I'm like, Beyonce saw my content, like I can just retire now. But yeah, that was really, and that was my first job, and it just kind of immediately ingrained in me, anything you're passionate about outside of work, you can bring into your workplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've tried to do that at every job I've had.
Do you ever find yourself kind of having a shift to like the doldrum type outlook? And kind of, if you do, what do you do to just kind of snap yourself back out of that?
Yeah, I'm human, of course. I have days where I'm like, oh gosh, like another status meeting. Like it can feel monotonous. But I always have this voice from my mother in my head where she always says, like, victims are people that are unwilling or unable to change their circumstances. And so you can never be a victim of your situation at work because that just means that you are unwilling to change. It's usually not that you're unable, it's that you're unwilling. And then also, my parents always told my brother and I when we were bored, they'd say, there's no such thing as being bored. There are only boring people. Did your parents say that?
Yeah.
It's so annoying when they say that. But it's kind of true. Like, if you're bored at work, it's really on you. So if I'm having a moment where I feel like I'm not excited by something, I try to challenge myself to figure out how to fix it.
So, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your parents too, because your parents had traditional corporate jobs as well.
Oh yeah, super corporate.
Right, and have done really well as well. So you were raised in that environment. I wonder what degree of conditioning contributes to kind of having a more positive outlook about work and just making a living through a job.
That's really interesting. And I never made that connection, but I think you're absolutely right. Like my father was a headhunter. He's retired now. And my mother, her whole career was in marketing at different companies. So I would see them come home from work and over dinner, they would talk about how excited they were about their job. And I think, that probably gave me a more positive outlook.
Yeah. I feel the same, like just having traveled around. Because, you know, when you're growing up as a kid, you don't think about it as work, right?
Yes.
It's just the thing that people do.
Yes.
Like it was just the thing that my dad did. Mm-hmm. But you know, it conditions you to kind of appreciate it. And in many ways, I find a lot of my own career aspirations now are rooted in things that I saw modeled by my family and my parents as well. But okay, so we've talked a little bit about why we're not going to adopt this like negative mentality and the benefits of just kind of understanding the value of work. But really tangibly, what is it? Like, what can we get out of these day jobs that we spend the majority of our lives at?
I think that there's so much. I mean, I'm lucky to be at a large corporation like Viacom, where there's a ton of professional development that they offer for employees if you're willing to take it. So whether it's taking a course on PowerPoint presentation skills or saying, hey, I want to learn Photoshop so that we don't have to outsource it to a designer every time files come in. I want to learn how to do SEO. And then if you have passions on the side, then that's even better because you can then take that learning and apply it to the catering business you're trying to start on the side or whatever it is. But I have found that at large corporations especially, there are a ton of opportunities for them to pay for you to like skill up because they it's in their best interest for you to be a really skilled employee. So,
and I mean, like, I think trainings and classes have been great. I also love the concept of like conferences if you can hack it.
Yes. Oh my
even
gosh.
Like internal forums and panels and things like that.
I think the employee resource groups, we have employee resource groups. I think most companies have employee resource groups.
Tell us what those are for it.
Yes.
People who maybe
We call them ERGs, and I didn't even know what ERG stood for. But it's employee resource groups either for women. I mean, we have them for LGBT employees. We have them for women at work. We have them for black employees. We have them for Asian American employees. And it's just kind of a safe space, if you will, and they do a lot of events and host panels and do outings. And it's a great way to meet people across the organization because I think if you're at a great company, even if you're not at a great company, there are probably really smart people there. Right. And part of the thing that you have to push yourself to do is try to meet those smart people and reach out to them and say, hey, I really admire you. Yeah. I think about Jesus and Mero trying to figure out they were at Viacom when I first joined.
Oh, really?
And their real names are not Jesus and Mero. And it was a challenge to figure out what their email was in the little Viacom system. And even when I found it, like, it's not like I got a response.
Yeah.
And when I did finally meet them, I was like, hey, I've been emailing you. And they were like, we don't check our email. Of course you don't. But it took me feeling like, okay, I'm here in the building. So yeah, I'm going to introduce myself to someone like Charlemagne, or I'm going to introduce myself to Jesus and Mero and try to make those connections with people that I'm inspired by. And even if you don't like your immediate coworkers, 9 times out of 10, there's someone within the entire organization that you admire and figuring out how to get close to them. I also think just on conferences, if for things like South by Southwest or Cannes, if you're so lucky to have your company have you go, it's not just about asking to go, because I think a lot of people, and I think junior people kind of make that mistake sometimes of saying like, hey, I'd love to go to this. You have to position it in a way that will be the benefit for the company is clear.
Right.
So I'd like to go and cover it on our Twitter feed and then present a recap back to our consumer insights team on learnings. And when you frame it that way and you say, I've done all of the math, this is what it's going to cost, I'm going to stay at the cheapest place and take these flights, and this is the total number, then it's really easy for your manager to say, okay, yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like, people just don't even know
that
their companies have these resources.
Yeah. So I think when you first start, you know those, like, first few weeks really in a new job when you really have nothing to do and you're, like, scrolling through the company intranet? That is the time to figure out, because you're going to become so swamped that you won't have the time. But I have to always continually remind myself to carve out, and usually Fridays are my days where I do this, just to actually block out time for yourself to figure out what untapped opportunities there are within your company. HR is there for a reason, and I think, you know, being proactive about reaching out to them. But also, I've tried to develop relationships with people where it's not always me coming to them when I need something.
Yeah.
So going out for coffee with someone, your HR generalist, and developing a relationship so they're invested in you. Mm. And then so when you go to them because you need something or you want to know how to find the professional development courses, they know who you are.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, one thing I like about you on a personal note is, like, you're quick to shoot a quick text over that's just like, hey, I have a question on this, which is, I think a lot of us when we're more junior are we are scared to do that because we're like, oh, you have to go through the formal channels of an email and like giving all the context. But that like reaching out like and just texting is how we all interact. It's more akin to the way people interact naturally. And so I think it creates like these bonds that feel real.
Yes.
With people in your network. And it's helped me to shift the way I think about networking mm-hmm. too. It doesn't always have to be very formal and in an email then people are going to take 2 weeks to get back to you
because sure.
they're swamped. Yeah. But with a text, I'm like, yeah, I can give you a quick answer. Mm-hmm. So
something that I've learned recently, and it's interesting talking to some more senior executives about this, I'm learning that from their end, it's actually very daunting if someone asks if they can be a mentor to them. It's like, what? Like, I have enough on my plate. I'm not trying to take you on as a mentor. So it's almost like, well, if you identify someone you want to be your mentor without them knowing officially, you know, it's a very formal ask to be like, can you mentor me? You kind of just create the mentor-mentee relationship, but don't necessarily formalize it that way.
Connecting them with others, I found that's a huge value proposition when you're building your network. It's just like, oh, you have a job posting. It might not be for me, but let me forward it to the rest of my network and help you
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Another value I think about a lot with corporate jobs is just credibility. We had Felicia Hatcher on a recent episode. She's an entrepreneur, and she was talking about how, you know, she left her day job and she wished that she would have leveraged it in the NBA to kind of just get out there and because it's on your resume and it's like, I worked for the NBA and it opens doors whether
Absolutely.
You like it or not. Like
Absolutely.
It really does.
I think that I don't know if this is like an official number, but I've heard that on average recruiters spend less than 30 seconds looking at your resume and they're really just scanning for brand names, right?
Yeah.
There's like a brand recognition thing going on. And I did well at Stanford, but no one's ever asked me what my grades were. They just said, oh, you went to Stanford.
Right.
And they assume, okay, she must be smart.
Right.
They don't really take the time to go deep. They say, okay, you worked at Ralph Lauren. Like, it's just this, like, name recognition thing.
Yeah.
And it's natural for human beings to kind of scan that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's definitely value to working at a big company.
So, I mean, lean into it. Or even if it's not a big company, but with big brands, with big partners, big clients.
Absolutely.
Or just things you know people will appreciate and recognize. I think we could definitely all do a better job of, like, leaning more into that.
So, from this conversation, it kind of sounds like that really, it's about basically like leaving your desk. Like the work is more than just like what's happening at your computer all day.
Totally. I think it's really tempting to kind of just like hunker down and be like, I just need to focus on like getting through my to-do list. But that's not how you make an impact on an organization. You have to get to know people and connect with them on a personal level. I think we're moving towards this culture of authenticity. So I think about like the rise of Tiffany Haddish and Cardi B. People love them because they're authentic and they're who they are. That is not appropriate behavior for the workplace. You can't act like that.
Not usually.
In your corporate day job. But I think that it's just, we loved Cardi before we heard a song from her. We loved her personality. And then so when the music came, we were like, okay, if people like you as a person, then the work, they're going to be so much more open to it. They'll give you more constructive feedback because it's really about investing in you as a person.
Mm. Yeah.
Even if all of your work is perfect, but you never say hi to anyone, I don't think you're going to be well received.
Yeah. How can you kind of think about using the current role that you're in and the company connections that you have to get clarity about whatever it is that you're aspiring to next, whether it's entrepreneurship or different type of role or promotion? I feel like we get a lot of letters about people who are in transitions or trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you kind of take the place that you're in now and help that to build and direct you in terms of figuring out the next
Even
step.
If you like don't like where you are,
exactly.
You can still use
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I mean, haven't you guys had instances where you had a bad experience working on something and just you knew in your head, okay, now I know I don't like this.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was working on PR stuff.
Oh,
and
like
event stuff. I was interning at Vogue and I was working on like a seating chart and the RSVPs kept coming in. We kept changing these like little pieces of paper around a table. And I was like, this is a job that people like I was. And it's because I'm not like this super detailed. I'm not a perfection. I think if you're like an OCD type person, you thrive in something like events and PR. It was not for me. Have you guys like encountered things that you were like, this is not for me?
Yeah,
what were they?
For sure. I don't like when my work is behind a computer for too long. Mm-hmm. I like interacting with real people, real customers, or at least knowing that the work that I'm doing will impact real people. So I'm not good for like strategy decks if I don't get to see the strategy through. I'm not good for, just like stuff
you
like
that. You want to execute.
So boring.
You want to execute. You want to like do it.
No program planning. Like if I'm program planning, I have to be able to execute it as well.
That's good. That's a good thing to learn about yourself.
Yeah.
Mine's similarly PR, especially like media relations, like hounding reporters.
Like outreach.
Anything that involves like having to follow up with someone again and again.
Heard my last email. Wanted to follow up. I hope you had a great weekend. Following up.
It's like, please just respond so I can tell my boss that you responded so they will stop asking me to hound you.
So I think it's, figure out what you don't like. That's step one. And then I think, for me, I've been lucky in that, and actually I think all millennials have this advantage. If you're working at a company, usually they're trying to target you, right? Mm-hmm. So you have this unique perspective in being and saying, okay, I listen to a lot of podcasts. You guys are trying to get millennials to care about your brand. Why don't we do a podcast? And this is who I think we should do it with. And this is how I could help. It's kind of like figuring out what you're paying attention to and then relaying that back to the brand that you work for and figuring out, or like, hey, I think we could do this really cool YouTube series, or we have all these great guests that come in and out of the office. Why don't we do a Q&A with them and post it on LinkedIn, right? So like figuring out those natural things that you are interested in and bringing it into work. And then I think just being open to things.
And I mean, to your point, it's like you can't be afraid to use your voice, too. I think a lot of us are scared of how that might be received or like going through the proper channels or whatever the case is. But you can't be afraid to just like get in there and get in the game and use your voice. Even if it's wrong, like at least you're vocal and you're visible and, you know, you're contributing to the organization.
And I think it's challenging for introverts. Like I'm naturally conversational with people. I think that if you are not someone who is comfortable, and I deal with this with my brother, he's very shy at work, and I'm always like, go and introduce yourself. He's like, no, ew. Like, God, no. Like, he's like, the thought of it alone, like, I'm not, like, it just gives him anxiety. And so even if in, like, your interpersonal skills aren't where you need them to be, just think in the back of your head about getting them to where they need to be, because you need them. And you can start small when you go down for coffee. Hey, does anyone else want coffee? I'm just going, you know, start small and then eventually you'll get more comfortable talking to people. But it's hard.
It is. I think we can let it either be daunting or take it as a challenge. Because I know at least when I started in the workforce and just being like the only minority there and just feeling like, oh, it's so, like to your point, like a lot of your opportunities are based off relationships. And you feel like, oh, how can I even fit into this? But embracing that, like, oh, I mean, I'm the flavor here.
Exactly. I love that. But then also, back to this idea about bringing your full self to work. Like, I love fashion. So if I see someone, regardless of what level they are, that's wearing an amazing outfit, I'm going to be like, I love your jacket. I love your look. Find ways to naturally connect with people and don't feel like you have to be this, like, corporate robot. Because I think, again, that adds to this idea. Anytime you're trying to act or put on, like, a facade, you're going to find your work soul-sucking. So try to be as much of who you are outside of work, in work, but obviously calibrate for the right situation.
This has been great. You know, we're rethinking our roles. We're thinking about the values we can get out of them. I think for a lot of people, though, who do have aspirations of entrepreneurship that are valid, that are purely based on the fact that the grass is greener on the other side, how do you start to think about your current role as preparation for, you know, maybe entrepreneurship or working for yourself?
Yeah, I think that you can, again, use what the company is doing to either learn what you want to do when you start your own company or what you don't want to do when you start your own company. And I think that there are ways to be really intentional about it. So I don't have a 10-year plan, a 5-year plan. Even when people ask me about that, it kind of gives me anxiety because I'm like, I don't know. I'm just focusing one day at a time. But I think about my friend Abigail. She is now starting a ski wear line, and she knew that she wanted to learn about the supply chain. And she wanted to learn about technical fabric, so she applied for a job at Nike and worked there for 2 years and knew very concretely, at the end of this time, I'm going to leave and start my own company. And that's what she's doing now. But that foundation that she got by working for Nike, she wouldn't have known those things. You know, you have to do a lot of Google searching to figure out Things that you can, again, just get paid to learn.
Yeah. And also, like, paid to fail on the company dime. Because you get to play around with the budgets and test things out and pitch things.
Oh, my God. I worked at a startup where it was mind-blowing to work there because this guy, he basically would say, like, oh, we've never done that before, but let's just get the client to pay us to figure it out. Right. And I'm like, you can do that. Right.
Yeah. And then you get to learn from that experience. Right. And if it was your own company and your own money, you wouldn't want to do that.
Right, right.
So I think there's a lot of value in, learning from big companies before you go out and start your own thing.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Brooke, this has been phenomenal.
It's
Thanks
been great.
So much for joining us. Where can our listeners connect with you? So many of them already are.
Right.
I see them on your page.
Yes, I know. There's a lot of Naked Beauty and Job Logs crossover, so I appreciate that. But yeah, the podcast is the Naked Beauty Podcast, and I'm at Brooke DeVard on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. It's just DEVARD, Brooke DeVard.
Amazing.
Yeah, go check her out.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right, now it's time for Ask Job Log. So this is the segment of the show where we address your career and life questions. As always, you can shoot a question over to us or just, send a request to pick our brains on a topic, a conundrum you're facing by visiting joblogs.com/askjoblogs or calling 929-324-1090. We have one question in the inbox today.
Yes, we have. This question states, hello, friends. I've recently graduated and started my first entry-level job in the field. At the time I was applying to this position, I received 3 job offers. While applying, I did some research and the reviews with former employees weren't the greatest. There were a lot of complaints regarding compensation, long hours traveling every day without overtime, some issues with management, etc. I figured the long-term goal is worth the short-term sacrifice, sucked it up, and applied. Fast forward to now, and long story short, I'm not enjoying it at all. The hours are long with no breaks or lunch during the day due to traveling. The conditions of the job require me to work out of my car because there's no central office and have zero interaction with coworkers. And I don't feel like the pay reflects the amount of work I'm putting in. I've also been feeling a lot less confident in my abilities due to a few mistakes I've made as a new employee. I know it's really early in the game and entry-level jobs aren't supposed to be perfect, but I can't help but feel an immense amount of regret for not choosing one of the other positions, and I'm constantly looking for new job postings that may pop up. What would be a reasonable amount of time to stay and add the learned skills to my resume without looking like I'm hopping from job to job? Thank you both for everything you do. Podcast is the reason why I haven't been receiving job offers in the first place. Truly changed my whole job search experience.
You are very welcome.
You're welcome.
You are welcome, and you are in quite a conundrum, honey.
Yes. It doesn't say how long.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. There. You said you recently graduated and started your first entry-level job. I feel like that, after you said that, my mind automatically did do, like, a entitled millennial thing. I'm so sorry. But I get it because, like, at that stage, like, you feel everything. Every experience feels like an eternity.
And it's like you're adjusting to just, like, work period, which is a process.
A whole thing. So, you're valid in how you're feeling and pay attention to all of how you're feeling. But I think we've talked about this in past episodes. You really just got to reframe this experience as a time to learn what you don't like and what
listen to Ms.
don't
Brooke.
Want.
This and episode was
exactly,
for you.
Exactly. I think probably right out of school, a minimum for me is a year.
Really?
Yeah. I think as you get older in your career, you could do, unless it's like,
unless it's like killing you inside.
Yeah, like your wellness is deteriorating, you're being demeaned, whatever.
Yeah.
But to me, like a year, because first of all, I believe you're onboarding for 6 months.
Real.
You pretty much don't know the company or the job or the role for the first 6 months.
Yeah.
And then you're finally getting in the swing of things.
And I'm thinking, like, to your point as a new grad, it's like for the next role that you have, do you want to, like, be competing with, like, other people who are fresh out of college?
Right.
Or do you want to come in, like, I have
a year of experience.
It's a different
thing. I think that's the big thing for me. Because if you had, like, 3 to 5 years of experience, you got I mean, I don't, it's not encouraged, but you can hop in 3 or 6 months and do it the right way. I have friends who, like, they went somewhere and it just was not the move, and they got a better opportunity because their expertise didn't rely on that one job that was, like, a mistake. Sure. So if you have other things on your resume, other internships, other job experience you can leverage, then sure, maybe start entertaining things a little earlier. But I'd say, like, try to stick it out for around a year, which means start looking heavily, like, that's 6 months in.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other problem with, like, being miserable so early on is that, like, you're saying you're, like, looking for jobs already. Your head is not in the game with your current role at all. And so I think you just have to make a decision. Like, am I going to kind of be miserable and come in every day and, like, add to my list of complaints? Or am I going to come up with a game plan and say, you know what, in 3 months from now I can start entertaining roles. But until then, I'm going to just stay focused on getting through this.
Yeah, getting something like a clear, like, success for your resume. And and then get out. I think I hated, I definitely hated my first job. Mm-hmm. And I stuck it out a year.
Yeah.
You can do it.
You can do it. And then, I mean, also, like, if there are a few things you can influence or change or feedback you can provide, consider it carefully. But again, just being new and entry level, it's such a dangerous time. No, like, you don't want to come out of undergrad like raising hell and drama. It's hard.
Yeah.
Your reputation in the work industry kind of sticks with you. So try to be a problem solver, not a problem creator, unless, like we said, it's just like destructive to your wellness.
So good luck. Keep us posted.
Well, thank you all for joining us again for another episode. Many thanks to Brooke for imparting all of that wisdom and helping us just think a little differently about, you know, the thing we call work.
Mm-hmm. And many thanks to our sponsor, One United Bank, America's largest Black-owned bank. And if you're enjoying this episode and you're looking for more resources, we definitely encourage you to head on over to oneunited.com. They have amazing blog posts and other resources to help you on your financial journey.
Be sure to follow them around the web at One United on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And don't forget, if you love the show, share it with a friend. You can connect with us around the web at Jawblogs or jawblogs.com.
I'm Cleve Out Loud.
I'm Hamis Parka. See ya.
See ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.